Welcome to Hot Weekly.
Everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction industry, covering everything from the big mega haunts to the tiny home haunts. Whether you're an actor, owner, or aficionado, we aim to be the podcast for you.
Yes.
I figure I can keep it fresh if I just change the intonation each time I do this. You know what I mean? It takes on totally different meaning.
Yeah.
Totally, right?
Yeah,
this
sure.
Works, right?
Yeah, sure. It's completely legit.
Well,
you've got the hand-painted sign outside, right?
Yeah, I'm like the guy that posts, you know, that tacks up the 24-hour daycare and yeah. Sharpie marker on the telephone pole outside your house. Yeah, I'm that guy right now. Totally legit.
Enter at your own risk.
Enter at your own risk. Risk it. Risk it.
Exactly.
Okay, a little Rocky Horror there. Yes, we are back. It is episode 22, and you might notice the date's a little different with this one.
Yeah.
A bit of business here.
Yeah, just a little bit.
A wee little bit.
Because our schedules have changed with summertime being here. It's getting harder to post on Sundays. So we're actually moving the day of posting.
Yeah, we're moving it one day. Just one day, I promise. One stinking day. It's now Monday.
Yep.
And the reason for that basically is, A, as Crystal just said, our schedules have changed. We have more weekend hours, more things to do on weekends. We have softball.
Yeah, yeah, you have a day-long obligation on Sundays.
Now. Yeah, that's a cluster duck, in a word. But furthermore, it gives us the whole weekend to sit down, come up with notes, get the podcast, get it edited, and do all that jazz.
Right.
It gives us the weekend proper to do this.
Yes.
And I like that, honestly. So I dig this move. I think moving it to Monday, 1 p.m., will be our usual posting time. Sometimes I've noticed we have a bit of an issue with Podbean, where I'll set it to post at a certain time and it'll appear later in the feeds.
Right.
I don't know what that's about. I'm trying to figure it out. But I think this is just part of, we're going to have to move to a real blog at some point in the not too distant future. The Podbean thing is not working out. But
and if anyone has a serious problem with the moving of the day one day, let us know.
Well, you are very sad people. And I'm just kidding.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do.
It is still weekly, though.
It should be fine.
This one is like one week and one day. Then we're back to the weekly thing. Okay,
yes.
I promise. It's okay. So this will all be good, I promise you. I'm really excited about this week's episode, though. This is another topic that's dear to our heart.
Yes.
When we think about the things that we have been for as long, if not longer, as we've been haunters.
Yep.
I think we both have been video game addicts.
Yes.
So this one is a really exciting one, but we've got to do housekeeping stuff before we jump into the fun stuff.
Right.
So first off, everyone, Happy Halloween! That's right. This weekend, as we are recording this, we're recording this on May 1st. This marked Halloween. Exactly 6 months until Halloween, which is bad for us because we didn't even finish Teardown on the outside structure of our haunt this week. Oh, man.
Well, it's been kind of rainy. That's what we did for Halloween was we worked a little bit on our haunt.
Yeah, we worked a little bit on our haunt. Took it down, did some analysis, and thought about some things. And, you know, it's weird. We're always thinking about our haunt. We never really stopped thinking about it. But the work schedule of it is like from November to, I would say, March.
Yeah.
Typically, we don't do much of anything.
Well, we do a lot of planning and
talking. We do a lot of planning and talking and
stuff. That's important.
We do inside housework. We don't do work physically on the haunt.
Right.
And then right around April, May, that's when we start. There's like an initial spurt of activity.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's demolition, whether it's rearranging or moving.
Right.
Whatever it is, there's a spurt of activity that continues for a few weeks, and then it dies off again right until we get to the August-September rush.
Yeah. Well, that's because June and July in New Orleans is really hot. And this, it's not air conditioned.
This haunt is in an air conditioned garage.
Unair conditioned.
Most haunted attractions I find are in unair conditioned environments, though. Unair conditioned, unheated environments. They're in warehouses, they're outside.
Yeah.
They're in places that don't have proper air conditioning. But they damn well have proper sprinkler systems.
Yeah, but I also know from some of our friends that a lot of the props that they build and stuff are inside of air-conditioned workshops.
Yeah, they use workshops to do the building.
We don't have that luxury.
No, we do not. Our haunt is our workshop.
Yes.
Insane. But yes, happy Halloween, everyone. Hope you're enjoying the pure halfway point between Halloween and Halloween.
Yes.
So, yeah, be thinking about your haunts. Obviously, if it's 6 months to Halloween, you have about 4.5 to 5 months until opening day.
Right.
That should put the fear of God into some of you. Not naming names here.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. We will not name names. But yes, so fear of God, Halloween, blah, blah, blah. Anything else you want to add?
Nope.
Okay. As is our new tradition, by new tradition, I mean we started it last week.
Yeah.
We are going to talk about conference reminders. Now, we went over a lot of the details last week, so right. We will just sort of blow through this pretty quickly, I think. First off, this is recording May 1st. We'll go live May 2nd in just 2 weeks' time. Halloween Extreme from May 15th to the 17th is at the DoubleTree Universal Studios Orlando, Florida. Blah, 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 Florida. Why is Florida so difficult to say? I sound like I'm from Florida.
I don't know.
I sound like I'm from Florida. But you can find out more info at HalloweenExtreme.com.
Yep.
Then, after that, there is... Do you want to do the next one?
Sure. Virginia Haunt Fest, June 3rd through 4th. It's Misty Mountain Camp Resort, Greenwood, Virginia.
It's aimed at Virginia Haunters, and it is at...
VirginiaHauntFest.com.
Then after that, in June 10th through the 12th, you have the Midwest Haunters Convention, one of the major haunt conventions. It is at the Greater Columbus Convention Center, as opposed to the Minor Columbus Convention Center.
Ha ha.
Ha ha ha. It also offers a tour of the Scaratorium. It is at MidwestHauntersConvention.com. Good luck entering that domain from this podcast on the first try. I dare ya.
Yeah. Next is Chicago Frights, July 29th through 31st, Orlando.
Orland Park.
My brain filled in the O and went to Florida.
The first 20 times I said it.
Georgia's Quality Inn and Suite, ChicagoFrights.com is where you can find more information.
Yes, yes. That is the sister conference to the HauntCon.
Yes.
Right there. And we have Scare LA, August 6th or 7th, at the Pasadena Convention Center. And where? Pasadena! Big surprise. It'd be really a shock if it were, like, you know, Los Angeles, like, you know, another town. Like, it's in Chicago again.
Yeah.
It's at ScareLA.com. And just a reminder, the lovely, sensual, sexy, the gal we've all been thinking about since our youth, Elvira, is hosting.
Yes.
And she's still looking great, by the way.
Yes. And Mask Fest, September 9th through 11th. And Marriott, Indianapolis East. And that's maskfest.com, and that's mask with an E, apparently.
Actually, I think it's just maskfest. I think that's a typo.
Okay. You typed old.
I think it's mask. Don't listen to her about the mysterious E.
Was it a typo negative?
No, we got to shut this whole thing down now. We can't let that go out on the air.
Hey, and unfortunately, we actually missed Texas Frightmare Weekend, which just was this weekend.
Yes, it was.
Our friend was there, and I saw pictures, and I'm like, how did I not know about this?
You know, this is so weird. When we started this podcast, I'm like, yeah, there's not that many haunt conventions. We'll do, you know, like a handful of these, and it'll be cool. It'll be a great thing to add to the show. And then I started Googling and, like, really researching this. And I know after researching it, we're missing a ton. So if we're missing one, Facebook us at Haunt Weekly. Tweet us at Haunt Weekly. Let us the flip know.
And we will get it on here. If you run it, let us know and we will give you a shout out, okay?
We will add you to this list. And if it's near us and the stars align and money, time, space... and our TARDIS all allow us to go, we will be there. Is that simple? Yes, we have a TARDIS. You heard it here, folks.
Oh, God. Okay.
Oh, that's a little special, so it's a re-TARDIS.
Moving on. Also, if you are one of the operators or planners of one of these, feel free to get in touch with us about being on the podcast to talk about what your convention's about and how many people, you know, specifics, you know, people might be interested.
Want to do a segment, want to do an episode, want to, you know, do anything.
Yep.
We're here. We'd love to have you on. We'd love to interview you. We're looking for great people to interview. Like I said, we're really starting, we're really getting to the point with this podcast where we're starting to ramp it up. We're thinking about getting our own site. We've got, this will be episode 22 under our belt. We're really thinking about taking this to the next level. Where previously, we've just been kind of seeing if...
if we would stick around
this long. If we can, like, because we've done these projects before, and they haven't made it, you know, that far.
Yeah.
Garbage horror.
Yeah.
Well, granted, that at least made it. That made it 16 full episodes, though. I gotta say, I'll check that out. And plus another 12 out of the can. So we actually did pretty good with that.
Yeah, and we still do the haunt reviews there.
Still the haunt reviews there. So yeah, Garbage Horror wasn't an epic failure. And I blame a lot of the end of it.
No, there are a lot that they will never, ever know about. There's a graveyard of ideas out there.
You know, maybe we should get back into it at some point. If we ever stop doing the haunt, we should bring Garbage Horror back.
Sorry. Yeah.
In the land of things that'll never happen.
Exactly.
This one is king.
Exactly.
This idea just took the throne.
Yeah. You're not taking my haunt away. I'm sorry.
You'll take the haunts when I call dead Hans.
Well, you know, if I'm dressed as a zombie.
I know. And your hands are pretty cold. I will testify to that before any court of law.
Yeah, I know.
So.
Yeah.
We're halfway there, pretty much.
Okay, so we're supposed to be talking about video games, right?
What's the topic of this goddamn show? I have show notes here. It's actually pretty cool. Yeah, one of the things when we were starting this podcast, we were like pitching ideas back and forth.
Right.
And one of the crazier ideas we had was we felt we needed to talk about horror video games.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is, even though there's a huge overlap between people who love video games, people who run haunted attractions, it seems like people aren't putting these in the same headspace.
Right.
And I find that a little frustrating.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
It seems like they're naturally connected.
Well, I mean, and the reason they're naturally connected to me, and the reason I really wanted to do this, is how many haunted attraction websites, how many haunted attraction flyers say that this is an interactive horror film, or live the horror film experience, or insert variation
thereof.
It's a cheesy line, but you do see it over and over again.
Right, and you know that you're not going to really be killed at these things.
Yeah.
I would hope, at least.
I don't know. There have been a few. I've been very unsure of that fact.
Yes, but hopefully...
And not for the right reasons.
Yeah. Hopefully it's, you know, to scare you, but not to actually hurt you.
Yeah.
So advertising
it as... I liken
it
to a roller coaster,
though. Advertising it as, you know, actual horror film where people get killed is not exactly honest.
But then again, it makes a lot of sense, though, from a marketing standpoint, because who is your audience for haunted attraction? Typically, the market for haunted attractions heavily overlapped with the market for horror movies. And so how do you get people to fork over that extra money? It's like a horror movie, but more interactive, better, more awesome. You're living the experience.
Yeah, I suppose.
But you know, but the truth of the matter is, whether we agree with it or not, it's there.
Yeah.
It's real. We've seen it on flyers.
Yeah.
Multiple haunts that we go to have done similar advertisements. Why watch the movie when you can be in it or something
right.
like that? And it's kind of cheesy, but it illustrates the point that many people think of haunted attractions as interactive horror movies. The problem is, they're not, as we've said.
Right.
They're definitely not that. However, horror video games very much are interactive horror movies.
Right.
And that's potentially a problem.
Well, no, it's something that we can look at and learn from.
Well, yeah. But at the same time, when you're billing yourself as an interactive horror movie, which, like I said, many haunts do, for reasons not entirely clear to me, they do. And people are going to go, well, yeah, but so is Soma. So is, you know, Alone in the Dark. So yep. is all these other things. They're all, interactive horror movies are not that special anymore. Mm-mm. And I'm going to repeat this sentence at least two other times in the course of this podcast. Go on Steam right now, punch in horror, and look at the deluge of games you are bombarded with.
Right.
It is mind-blowing how many horror video games there are. Many of them quite good.
Yeah.
Many of them very, very good. This seems to be the genre the indie community has picked up on, and it is blowing up right now. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's taking it to 11. It's going to the extreme.
Boy, I think people are tired of all of the gray first-person shooters that have been the thing for the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
And this is more thought-provoking. It gives our brains are made to figure out puzzles yeah. and challenges and are looking at mystery.
And it's also something you can very easily do if you're a low-budget indie company, too.
Right.
You're not having to program the AI for 20,000 people. Yeah. You're not having to build an advanced combat system. It's
right.
great for indie developers, too. Because it's more walking and puzzle than it is shooty-shooty, story-story. You know what I mean?
Right.
You have a central great idea, and you build a game around that.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, I tend to look at things from a cost standpoint, personally.
Right.
Because I'm a greedy son of a bitch on some level.
Yeah.
Cost-wise, horror video games have our asses beat.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even if you pay full price for the game, which, once again, go on Steam, look up horror, you're going to find that they're not this price.
Yeah.
But even if you paid full tip-top price for a video game, $60, you're still getting multiple hours of gameplay out of that.
Right.
Where a haunt, a relatively inexpensive haunt, averages $1 a minute.
Right.
So we're, even at its most expensive, a horror video game is 2, 3, 4, 5 times cheaper than a haunted attraction per minute.
Yeah. It gives you a lot longer experience.
It does.
You get a lot more for your money.
Not
necessarily a lot more for your money, but a lot more time
for your money. Yes, exactly. That is assuming you don't totally chicken out and like play no more than 15 minutes of Amnesia: The Dark Descent, which one of us in this room might have actually done.
Maybe both of us.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's a scary game. I'm just saying, man.
Well, it...
Okay, it's not just that. It's...
No, it...
We'll get to it. How about we save it and get... We're actually talking about the damn game. So...
All right, fine.
Let's wait. Let's kick that can down the road. But yeah, I wanted to do, before we jumped into this, a sort of brief, and I do mean brief, history of horror video games. And look, I'm no video game historian.
Right.
This was all done from my personal knowledge and my personal experience, plus research I did online.
Yeah.
This isn't super meticulous, and even with my limited exposure and my limited time, I left a lot out.
Yeah.
There are a lot of games I wanted to include, I couldn't include into this.
There are just too many.
There are just too damn many. It's true, there is. But, okay. What is widely considered, and I found this one interesting, I had not actually heard of this game before the research.
Mm-hmm.
The first survival horror game, what's widely considered to be it, was called 3D Monster Maze, which is funny because it has no monster in it. The monster is actually a T-Rex, but I guess they couldn't call it 3D T-Rex Maze or some crap.
No.
Basically, the idea is this, that you are in a maze.
Okay.
Big shock.
In the name.
Big shock. A T-Rex is trying to eat you, and your goal is to escape the maze.
Okay.
It is straightforward. It is simple. It was released in 1982, and I hope to God I say this right, it was on the Sinclair ZX81.
Right.
I can see why that system did not take off right now.
Yeah.
But apparently the game was very, very popular, and it's, like I said, it's widely credited for being the first survival horror game. It noted for the fact that you have no attack against this T-Rex.
Right.
All you can do is run from him. You are in a maze. You are lost. And your whole purpose, your whole way to win is to survive.
So other than the riddles, it's like being in the Minotaur's maze.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
Now, there were a lot of, and I, use the term quote-unquote horror games here, that followed soon thereafter. But they weren't what I think of as horror. They were games like Haunted House for the Atari 2600.
Right.
Which basically followed the puzzle genre, but put it in a haunted house setting.
Right, so you just change the skin of the game, not the actual game itself.
Exactly. You are, I believe in that one, you were a pair of eyeballs roaming around a dark house, finding a key and taking it to a door and getting a candle. You know what I mean?
That sounds like an escape room.
It kind of was, actually. It was more of an escape room. Then you had the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the first game based in... And she's laughing. I know exactly why she's laughing. This was the first game, I believe, that was based upon an actual horror movie franchise. Right. So give some levity to that.
Yeah.
Before we mention the Angry Video Game Nerd episode about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. If you guys like old style video games, you should check him out if you don't know about him already.
Yeah, he's got over 100. No, he's got like 200 episodes, I think.
Yeah.
He's got almost an ungodly number of episodes.
Yeah, if you want to see what this game played like, go and watch that, because there's some...
Cinemassacre's YouTube channel, check it out. It's
You'll put
great.
It on the show notes.
I'll put it in the show
right?
notes or something. I'll do something with that. But basically, it was a standard action game.
Yeah.
But instead of you being the good guy gunning down bad guys, like a Wild West game or something,
right.
you were Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre mowing down little girls. And yes. this game caused a huge shitstorm.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's pretty fun to be put in the villain role, because you don't get that a lot in video games.
No, I mean, going to that particular question, you think of, like, Dungeon Keeper immediately.
Right.
Dungeon Keeper 2, which is a fun great game.
Yeah.
And it's a horror-ish theme. I mean, maybe we should have yeah. put it in there. But it's basically a strategy game.
Yeah, it's more of a strategy game and getting in trouble with the narrator for having too many mistresses.
Yeah. That's how you played it.
They were powerful.
Yeah, well, actually, the best part about the mistresses was when you could do the possession spell on them.
Right.
And take them over, and this is like getting way too in deep for our audience. But they were really great to possess because their attack. You could stick and move
right.
with them, and they were really powerful when you possessed them.
Right.
And took them over in first person mode. But yeah, that's way too deep into that game.
For something that's not even on our list.
Not even on our list. You also have like Haunting Starring Poltergeist, which is one of my personal favorite games of all time.
Uh-huh.
Which is where you are a ghost, your job is to scare a family out of it, and it includes a variety of comical... It's mostly a comedy game, if we're going
yeah.
to be straight about it, not a lot of horror to it. But it's very similar to other games where you're trying to basically get rid of people.
Right, and this is basically where horror games today make you as the player unsettled and try to scare you.
Yeah.
This was trying to scare the other characters in the game.
Yeah. Now there actually is a pretty interesting mobile game based around the same principle. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I just remembered it.
It just triggered you.
Yeah,
yes.
It did actually. Yeah, I'm totally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I believe it's called Haunt the House.
Okay.
And it's a very similar style of game in that you are a ghost, you are haunting, but where Haunt the House is kind of a 2D side-scrolly thingy. I've got photos of it on my laptop. I'm showing Crystal.
Right.
Poltergeist was an isometric pseudo 3D deal.
Right. You can move around the whole room,
yeah.
set up
and
different scares.
I have Haunt the House on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't like it nearly as much as Poltergeist.
Yeah, well...
So, video game recommendation for the Haunters.
Yeah.
Haunting, starring Poltergeist with the Sega Genesis.
Yeah, and Poltergeist, you know, one of the things that is kind of like a haunted house is you got to pick where you set up your scares and what scares you set up. So, to make the most effective scare of the character you were trying to get.
Exactly.
You know.
And one of the things that I encourage you to do is, like, you set up chains.
Right.
And one of the ways you could be really effective at the game was to set up a chain where you would set one here and, like, the next one, the next one, the next one, and you would lead them where you wanted them to go.
Right.
In a weird way, it's kind of the opposite of what you do in a haunted house, because haunted house, what do we say? Scare.
Forward.
This way, you're kind of scaring backwards intentionally. But you're using it because every scare draws, they're drawn to the scare physically.
Right.
So you scare ahead of where you want them to go rather than behind.
Right, but you scare them to another scare.
Exactly, precisely. So yeah, very interesting game, but not really relevant to the conversation. Once again, way too goddamn deep into something not too pertinent. Also, one of my games I remember from the Genesis era, Splatterhouse, and its multitude of 80 billion sequels.
Right.
But basically, it was just a side-scrolling beat-em-up action game.
Yeah.
Just super gory and against monsters and zombies.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, you can say the same thing about Doom, realistically.
You could.
It was a horror game, but it was realistically just Wolfenstein 3D with zombies and monsters. It was way more cool than that, and you know it.
It was. I played Doom quite a bit, so it was a lot of fun.
But there was that deluge of horror-themed games.
Right.
And you can even think of, like, Manhunt could be included on that list.
Yeah,
realistically, just a stealth action game, but with horror murder elements. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that one's a little bit of a stretch. That one was more about killing other characters.
It was.
And
that's one of the differences between, and one of the things we're going to get into is this idea of disempowerment.
Right.
And because basically what happened is sometime around all this, real, actual, quote-unquote, survival horror began to take off.
Right.
And here we've got a laundry list of things.
Right. This is where it switched from scaring other characters, killing other characters, to the video game developer trying to scare the player.
Yeah. The original in this was a game, and I remember playing this one for the 3DO.
Right.
It was called Alone in the Dark. If you haven't played it, I do not recommend. It is a very interesting game. It is a very interesting concept. The controls are utter shit. It is almost unplayable.
Did you play it alone in the dark?
Yes, I did, actually, multiple times. the game concept is really cool, but the controls are so terrible in it that you really get more frustrated by the character not doing what you want him to do rather than enjoying the horror of the game. System Shock was a cyberpunk-themed horror game.
Yeah.
You played a hacker. That came out in 1994. Clock Tower, you and I remember some Clock Tower.
Jing, jing,
jing, jing, jing, jing, jing, jing.
That was the whole, you know, they did a good job of building up atmosphere and
intention with that one,
and knowing that the bad guy was getting close and that you were failing.
Yeah.
You know.
Because I remember
I don't think I ever beat that game.
I don't think we did. I don't think I did either. Because, what we're talking about is the lead villain in it. I don't remember that much about it. It's been so long since I played it. Had a giant pair of scissors, though.
Yes.
And so, and he was constantly, like, the scissor man from the Tiger Lily song.
Yeah.
Was constantly stink, stink, zink, zink. And when you're taking too long, when you're not solving the puzzles, when you're not advancing properly, you'll hear zink, 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 zink off in the distance. And then it'll grow louder, zink, zink, zing, zing. And then he's right on top of you, and he's such a slow goddamn walker. I don't know how he catches anything that can go past a brisk jog, but it's like, but then he's on top of you, and you're boned, and then you have, speaking of games that were really cool in concept but totally boned by terrible controls, the original Resident Evil in 1996.
Right. I've played some of the other in the series, but I don't think I've played the original.
Yeah, I know you've played 3, Nemesis. You and I played that together.
Yeah.
And I remember you and me working together to beat. We beat that one.
Yeah.
I've beaten the first, but that was eons ago. Now it feels like eons ago.
Right.
And I say eons, it was 20 years, Jonathan.
I know.
2016. It's not that old. God damn. Then you have the Silent Hill franchise, which is a franchise that still spooks Ellie, and we're not allowed to talk about it in front of her.
Yeah, anyway.
But what these games had in common was that they incorporated puzzle solving with fear-based environments, scary environments, basically.
Right.
There was almost no focus on combat in these games. Many of these games, like Alone in the Dark, had combat. Resident Evil had combat.
Right.
I think Clock Tower kind of did.
No, once he caught you, you were dead.
Yeah, you were screwed. But the point is, in all these games, if there was combat, it was a secondary activity.
Right.
You were supposed to solve puzzles. You were supposed to answer riddles And the reason was...
How to survive.
Yeah. There was no power fantasy in these games.
Right.
You, even with... If you found all the weapons and got all the skills, you couldn't possibly kill all the bad guys.
Right.
Because, you know, you think of games like Halo or Call of Duty or whatever. It's you, the big bad space marine, regular marine, whatever, yep, mowing down all the bad guys and... I'm bad. Yeah. I'm tough.
Yeah. If you do like those kind of games, I recommend you play Spec Ops The Line.
Oh!
It's got bad controls, but I still recommend it.
I recommend it, too, only because I'm winning the Asshole of the Day award by joining their recommendation. No, I mean, I'm not an asshole today for the game, for the record. Yeah. Just what it will do to you.
Yes.
That's a hard fucking game, man.
Yes.
Hard game. Anyway, but there's no power fantasy in it.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. You are a weak protagonist. You are squishy, fleshy, spongy, gooey.
Like a human?
Like a human in a zombie apocalypse. And if you try to go it alone and go guns blazing, you are going to die so hardcore. It's not even funny. Actually, it's kind of hilarious. Yeah. But it's not funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what those games brought.
Right.
And that's very similar in many ways to the experience of a haunted attraction.
Yeah.
You can't. You're not supposed to punch.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean some it doesn't
people,
happen.
Some people do have that reflex where their flight or fight kicks in and they fight and everybody's been there.
Or Mike had a black eye last year because of someone.
No, he didn't.
Well, okay. He got hit and he had a mark. He didn't have an actual honest. He got a black eye. You're right.
No.
Got hit pretty good, though.
Yeah, well...
He's a big dude, and he can take it, but, I mean...
Yeah, anyway.
Anyways, but, of course, there are horror-infused action games, and...
Right.
And the first one I thought of when I was talking about the sort of the new modern generation was one of my favorite games of all times, actually.
Hmm. Condemned Criminal Origins.
Yes, it's Condemned Criminal Origins. A really, really good game that will not let you ever look at a lead pipe the same way again. Yeah, I love that game because it's called a melee first-person shooter, which pretty much is what it is.
Right.
But there are guns in it. There's just only like 12 bullets.
Yeah.
You know?
Good luck.
It's like the Chris Rock bit. I don't believe in gun control. I believe in bullet control. That game believed in bullet control.
Yeah.
Then there's F-E-A-R, or Fear, as most sane people call it.
Yes.
Which was 2005. That, of course, became a trilogy. Bioshock.
Fear, actually, is one of my first... I would compare it most like a haunted house.
Okay.
Because you're going along, and then... everything changes or melts away and you're in the hospital and there's that creepy little girl at the end of the hall and you have no idea how you got there or where she's from.
Yeah, but the weird thing about Fear is that Fear really did a decent job, I think, splicing the survival horror with the power fantasy.
Right.
Because you are a big, bad, kick-ass marine dude, or dudette, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, person.
Person in this. But there are moments in the game and segments of the game where that power is taken from you utterly and completely.
Yeah. And that's what I think of. Because it keeps you on edge of when is shit going to go get real. You know? Just when is it going to get real? That was the first game I think I felt that in.
Okay. Also, Bioshock. The first Bioshock came out in 2007.
Right.
Very, a somewhat similar situation, but in that one... it felt to me more like, because of the way I played it, because I'm a terrible human being, I felt like I was becoming the horror monster and the horror villain.
Yeah.
Rather than the other people. But that's beside the point. I'm Left 4 Dead, which you should never play with Crystal.
It's fun.
Okay, look, for those who play Left 4 Dead, I'm only going to say this once. We got up against the tank. It was the two of us and two computers.
It was the first time playing.
That bitch hit him with a Molotov.
It killed everything else.
Yeah, but now the tank is pissed off and on fire. Big fucking bucket of help you were.
No, the real reason you shouldn't play with me was because when we played that one where you were playing as the bad guy, one of the things trying to kill me and my team.
The zombies, yeah.
I just abandoned my team. And they got eaten, and I was free.
Yeah, she will sell your ass out, is what it comes down to. Anyways, Left 4 Dead, great shooter, horror, zombie game, but once again, power fantasy oriented for the most part.
Yeah, and there are some mechanics in the game that let you know when zombies are coming, and, you know, it is part of that build-up and recognizing, okay, where is it going to come from?
It's a great shooter, but not necessarily a great, not necessarily something Haunted Attractions can build on in huge ways.
Right.
And then you have Dead Space, which actually has more of the not power, because when you start the game, you're just a mechanic. You know, basically, if I remember correctly,
yeah.
And you're on this ship and you're trying to figure out what's wrong, and then shit starts going wrong,
yeah,
even more wrong, and you know, so it has a little bit of that, but at the same time, it is a shooter and a little more horror infused. But yeah. Since then, that was 2008.
Now I will say that all of these games
are excellent,
have great set designs.
Oh yeah,
you know, if you want, you know, some clues for set design, and you want to, you hit a wall and can't think of anything, go play a video game.
Yeah, but none of these are about powerlessness.
Right.
And that's kind of the reason they're lumped together. But we got the rise of modern indie horror, which this is what you should go into Steam, Google, not Google, search for horror. You can't Google for horror inside of Steam.
No.
Ooh,
Yes. Googling and searching are the same thing, but they're not interchangeable yet.
Not yet, no. But no. Now, this genre really kicked off in 2010 with Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
Yeah.
That's what put it on the map.
Yeah, it's basically you wake up, you have no idea what's going on. It's a, you know, first-person point of view. So it's actually your eyes, like, opening and stuff.
Yeah.
And you just start wandering around trying to get
a grip on what's happening,
Yeah. Yeah, I will say the very first time I played this, because I've given this game a couple of shots, I couldn't figure out the first puzzle. I saw a hole in the ceiling, and so then I got stuck getting all of those boxes out of the various rooms and trying to climb up through the hole in the ceiling to get to the next level. It wound up being some secret door in a bookshelf. Something, you know, that should have been really obvious.
Yeah, I'm sure it should have been. Alan Wake came out soon after, a light-based game. A game that's dear to our collective hearts here, Slender Man.
Yes, which is now a very popular costume.
Yes.
So if you don't know about Slender Man, the video game, or where all of those morph suits come from, you might want to check it out.
Yeah, I remember playing Slender and during the blackout caused by Hurricane Isaac.
Right.
That was a lot of fun.
And is it still a free download?
Yes, there is a free game that you can download, but there is now a, I think it's called...
There's
a version of the game, I'm trying to look it up in Steam real fast while we are sitting here talking about it.
Yeah.
It's Slender the Arrival is the paid version of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the goddamn free one's scary enough. You don't need anything else.
Yeah. And once again, it's, you want to feel powerless about having your character survive. That's a good one to get into.
Yeah, that's powerlessness supreme.
Yeah.
And then you have Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes, which I've played several times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty basic. It's, you know, takes all of those terrifying memories of Chuck E. Cheese animatronics.
which we all have plenty.
And brings them to life. And you're a night security guard, and you're trying to, you know, stay alive, and you have a power limit. Because if the power goes out, the animatronics will come to life and kill you.
Which sounds counterintuitive, but that's not the point.
Yes.
And then after that, you have Soma, which is a modern sci-fi horror, a hybrid game.
Yeah.
And the reason we mention all these games and have our little powwow is not just so we can pine for playing video games.
Right.
They're totally pining now. But the kind of point out what these games do well.
Yeah.
And to me, the first and most important thing they do well is that feeling of powerlessness and helplessness.
Yeah.
The best horror games make you feel weak and fragile and spongy and vulnerable.
Mortal.
Yeah.
They make you feel mortal. Like your character can die.
Like when I play Halo or something like that, or Call of Duty, I feel flipping immortal. I get shot by all these soldiers and I just go and I suck my thumb around the corner and my health regenerates and I go back and I gun down more. Yeah. You know what I mean? I feel immortal. I feel like I can conquer the world. These games have the exact opposite feeling. I feel weaker, spongier, more fragile than I probably am in real life.
Right.
It's that emotion. And it's that emotion that we as haunters try to elicit from our patrons, from our customers. They also do unsettling imagery, typically, very, very well.
Right.
They've learned through these games how to include disturbing imagery. There's almost every game, to some degree or another, has found ways to make that happen. And to be clear, it's not necessarily gore we're talking about.
No.
It could be just Uncanny Valley stuff. That's what Five Nights at Freddy's is playing with.
Yeah, that's Uncanny Valley. Unrealness would be fear.
Yeah.
You know. That.
Yeah. That idea of the other, the unknown, the strange.
The lights flicker and the whole room changes around you.
Mm-hmm. And the silence or uncomfortable sounds or things like that.
Right. Silent Hill also plays with the Uncanny Valley with the nurses.
Nurse. Oh, God. The creepy, sexy nurses.
Yes.
That's
why you can't talk about it around Ellie.
But also, like, another one that is a common theme, and this, like, from also in some of the more action-oriented games, is harm to children.
Right.
Is a big one. It's something that haunters don't and can't really play with that much.
Yeah. But
video games can and do.
Yeah. Usually if we have kids in the haunt, and we, I'm talking as an industry, the way I've seen them used most often as ineffective is creepy.
Yeah.
They're being creepy. They're telling you to be quiet. I mean, they're telling you... Or they're laughing at something that they really shouldn't be laughing at, you know?
And I've said it before in this podcast, and I'm saying it now. For me, in a weird way, kids are like automatic Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Because they're like little versions of people.
Yes. Yes, they're not real people yet, John.
I know that they're real people, but it's just like, you know, I don't spend a lot of time around kids, you know?
Right.
We don't have kids. Ellie's got a 15-year-old son, so he's pretty much an adult in appearance.
Yeah.
You know, I don't spend a lot of time around kids, so when I see kids, they look like weird versions of people to me.
Yeah.
I guess if I ran a daycare, I'd have a different opinion on that.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. It's my personal experience. But the thing that I think they do best, and the thing we can really learn from, player choice.
Right.
Or customer choice in this. In a video game, the player actions impact the outcome.
Right.
And the player decisions matter.
Right.
Now, there are some, like, well, they're called walking simulators, where the choices aren't terribly important. You're just going along for a virtual experience, which is, to me, is basically just creating a haunted attraction in a computer, which seems kind of weird.
Yeah, because that is kind of what haunted attractions are. You walk through them. You don't... Yeah. Have a lot of choice on and
walking simulator brought to you by the House of Shock, or any other haunted. That could have been any haunted attraction.
Yes.
I'm not picking on the House of Shock there. It could be any haunted. It could be ours.
Yeah,
we're all walking simulators.
Yeah, but no. In giving the players choice on how to solve the puzzles and how to get out is important in games.
Yeah, where to look. Where to go, what to think, what to do, what to interact with.
Right.
What order to interact with, how they reach the conclusions. And that has a lot of impact. A, it means that no two playthroughs of a game are the same.
Right.
If I play Amnesia the Dark Descent and you play Amnesia the Dark Descent, we're going to have two very different experiences in that game.
Well, yeah, like you didn't spend 15 minutes getting boxes to climb out
making
the ceiling.
Making a little tower of boxes in a random corner in some room.
Yeah.
Like, where did you find all the flipping boxes?
I don't know. I found like 10 of them. They're big boxes, too. You couldn't see when you were walking with them. Anyway...
Amnesia the Dark Descent's box carrying simulator.
Yes. Warehouse worker.
But, you know, no two experiences are the same.
Right.
And finally, also, these games are not restrained by the physical.
Right.
They can take you to Mars. They can take you to the moon. They can take you to hell. They don't have to be restrained by the physical. They don't have to worry about practical effects.
Right.
Now, that being said, I think we as an industry have a lot we can learn from this.
Mm-hmm.
And we do actually have several advantages that we should exploit. And the first advantage is that we are physical.
Yes. We exist.
We exist. We're real. So that means we can impact all five senses.
Right.
I don't understand these haunts that are like, don't touch anything. And I get that you don't want people like messing with your props and your actors.
Yeah.
But when you touch people with strings, with anything, you know what I mean?
Feathers,
whatever you got. Mm-hmm. When you give people a touch sensation, that's something a video game cannot give them.
Right. If you put smells in your haunt.
Smells, yes, exactly.
You're not going to get that out of a video game.
No, you're not.
Smell-o-vision never came real.
Thank God for that. That's a terrifying idea. I don't know why people keep seeking that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yes, video games can do well with sight and with sound, but they cannot do well with the other senses.
Right.
Now, I don't know how anyone's incorporating taste, honestly. I'm scared to think of that one, but...
I think that that's one of the claims at McCamey Manor, make you eat stuff.
Whatever. But the point is, at least four of the five senses we can hit pretty conveniently.
Right. And that's everybody.
They can only hit two.
Yeah.
We got like 2x the senses, man. I mean,
yeah.
Right there. We're also special. because haunted attractions are limited to a certain place and a certain time.
Right. Video games, well, that can be an advantage or a disadvantage, really.
I know, it can be.
Because video games are available 24/7 in your home.
Yeah. But, that being said, that's one of the things that haunted attractions can do, is say, 1 year only, you know, for 3 nights only, or whatever.
Yeah.
This or that.
Well, and
give something that can't just be trivially bought on Steam.
Right. And, well, that's one of the things that makes videos a little less scary, is that it is in your home.
Yeah.
You're comfortable, you have control of your surroundings. Exactly. In a haunted house, you don't have control over that stuff.
Right. Right, exactly. And also, it's worth noting, like I said earlier, haunted attractions are shared experiences. You typically go through it with your friends. No two video game playthroughs are the same.
Right.
I don't think anyone else in the universe has tried Crystal's Box Tower Approach to Amnesia Dark Descent. If you have, please write us at Haunt Weekly on Facebook or Haunt Weekly on Twitter. And let us know so she will not feel so alone.
Oh, that's okay. I can be alone.
But there are very few co-op horror games because having a buddy kind of ruins the horror game.
Yeah. Yeah, the only one I can think of right off the bat is Don't Starve Together.
Yeah, and even that's kind of not necessarily a horror game. It's more of a survival game without the horror elements.
Well, it's a survival game. I thought there were monsters that would eat you.
It might be, but it's not.
We didn't play it very long. We didn't like.
We didn't get very much into it.
Yeah.
Granted, we played the beta, not the full version, so we got to throw that out.
Yeah.
But what can we learn? Where can we improve as an industry from what we've got from video games?
Right.
Well, first thing is, why don't we have more customer agency?
I think that, you know, they're starting to play with that more in escape room situations. Because that involves a lot of customer agency.
It's pure customer agency, yes, I agree.
And that is a powerlessness feeling, and it's a quote-unquote death at the end. If you don't figure it out, you
failure,
don't survive.
A loss, it's
well, it's
a defeat.
Called you don't survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a defeat. Even if it's not an actual literal death, it's
right.
A defeat. Now, I remember years ago going through the 13th gate, and they offering a choice of a path to go.
Right.
And I remember thinking that was the coolest damn thing I've ever seen in all
my
house.
Oh, yeah. I totally wanted to do that.
And I understand why haunts don't do that, because you've got to build twice as much. You've got to have twice as many actors.
Right.
It's a problem. But, I mean, why not have multiple paths through a room?
Yeah.
Why not offer multiple solutions to a problem sometimes?
Right. And thinking of it in video games, that brings you replayability.
Yeah.
I want to go that other way that I know that I didn't take. I want to hear other people talk about, you know, things that they did that I didn't get to do because I made different choices, and I want to go back and go through a haunted house again.
Even if it's something as simple as you're in a room with prop-based layout,
yeah,
and you've got the long, snaky way around, and you see, or if you look and you spot a shortcut,
Right.
But maybe you go through the shortcut, there's an extra scare, an extra, you know, something.
An extra room.
Or something, you know what I mean? Maybe an extra small thing there. Those things can add agency and can give customers an experience that might not be shared by their peers.
Right. And if you have an Easter egg room, which Easter eggs are things, is a video game term.
Yeah.
But if you have an Easter egg room and it gets out that you have an Easter egg room, how many people are going to come back trying all the different ways and going through your haunt and actually noticing all the work you put into it to try to find that freaking Easter egg room?
Yeah. So little surprises can go a long way.
Yeah.
Also, encouraging shared experiences.
Right.
This, like I said, we are a shared experience industry. Let's really build on that. And with social media, we can.
Yeah.
I mean, there's haunts out there that will do the scare cam.
Right.
Where you take and you buy the photo yourself for $5. Okay, that's great. But why not have the option of having them post that to their Facebook?
Yeah.
You know, and tagging everyone that's in the photo. Why don't we have more of these shared experiences? Why don't we make haunting and then try to encourage that social element of it?
Right.
I think that's something that's very, very important for us to do. 13th Gate had the photos on the way in.
Right.
1 year, but it was not really a shared haunt experience. It was a shared line experience.
Yeah.
Which, let's be honest, no one really wants to share the line experience.
Yeah. Now, I did recently see a thing, and we'll be talking about it in the news maybe, about an app that lets you watch live streams from haunted houses.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you could take that and add it with customer agency and let people choose when the monster jumps out?
Yeah.
Based on the video.
Like a controlled webcam type thing where they have a little button and they could...
Exactly.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, so getting more social, I think, is really, really, really important for us with this.
Yeah.
But also, focusing on making the experience special and unique.
Right.
Because while no two playthroughs of a horror game are exactly the same, they all have similar elements to them. They all have touchstones and plot points that are the same.
Right.
One of the things haunted attractions have the ability to do is, since we're not a game that's distributed millions of times via copies, either physical or digital.
Right.
We can change it up.
Yeah.
Even in subtle, small ways.
Yeah.
So that every experience is somewhat unique and somewhat different. We can out-unique video games.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Super easy. And that's something I think we should be focusing on, because if we're going to justify that additional cost per minute, that additional time sink there,
right,
we're going to have to provide a unique experience, something they can't get from video games.
Yep.
And yes, we're physical. Yes, we have a lot of advantages that are inherent.
Right.
But we can take it to 11 and make this industry even stronger and use these video games, not just, you know, not thinking of them as competition, but as a way to whet the appetite.
Right.
For a real haunted attraction experience.
Yeah. Maybe even if you had somebody who was able to make a mini video game of your haunted house to get video game players interested, just like
cool.
We did with horror people.
I do not think I have seen a video game based on haunted attraction.
Nope.
You say that.
Just thought of it.
I don't think I've seen one. That actually sounds like a really cool idea. Take that one to the bank, guys. Someone work on that.
Yeah, please.
You go. You go.
You go. Let us know how it turns out.
Well, let's not report back to Haunt Weekly.
Yeah.
I
want to know how the idea worked.
We're not charging anything for the idea. Just tell us how it went.
Yep.
Give us the scoop. But yeah, that, I think that pretty much covers this topic for us, you know?
Yeah.
And basically what I want to say is this. If you are a haunt owner and you're not playing horror video games, try a few. Try a few of the ones we mentioned over the course of this. Many of them are available in Steam, steampowered.net, I believe is the site for
right.
it. Please check it out. There are a lot of great steampowered.com, I apologize. There are a lot of great haunt horror video games out there, and you might get your next great idea from one of those.
Yep.
Well, is that all we have for this week?
I think that's it.
Well, on that note, everyone, I would like to take a moment to remind you, if you haven't picked up any not-so-subtle clues in the duration of this podcast, we are on Facebook at username Haunt Weekly. We are on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. We are also at hauntweekly.com, currently hosted on Podbean, probably pretty soon move somewhere else. We'll see how that one goes. But yes, definitely like, subscribe. We are currently available in the iTunes Store.
Yep.
We are available in Stitcher. Mm-hmm. And now, thanks to the update to Google Play, we are in Google Play.
Yay!
Google Play opened up a podcast store, you know, only like 10 years behind Apple, but we're not going to criticize them too much for that.
Yeah, well.
Anyways, subscribe to us on all those channels. We would love to have you. And let us know what you think.
Does it?
That sounds good. All right. Well, on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Legally, episode number 22 for Haunted Attractions and Horror Video Games. I almost said Haunted Video Games. It's Haunted with the Ghost of a Burrito!